I've not had the pleasure before this weekend of meeting our next speaker, Anthony Sullivan, who will take us to the Middle East. Tony Sullivan's a Wolverine. That is, he has his PhD in history from the University of Michigan. He's the author of several articles published in a variety of organs, including Aramco World Magazine, the Middle East Forum, American Arab Affairs, the Muslim World. He has taught in Beirut. He has lectured.
As I am at the present time about the possibility of American Arab-Islamic understanding, the polarization that exists between the West and the Arab and Muslim world at the current time is deplorable for a variety of reasons, particularly deplorable as it relates to the proper and effective promotion of U.S. national interests. I'll proceed on that in a moment. In the Middle East, indeed, there are unfortunately no signs of any great augmentation of freedom, either political or civil. The impact, and we've heard something about it, of the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan, the Iran-Iraq war, Islamic fundamentalism in Lebanon and elsewhere, and Israeli occupation of the West Bank and Gaza Strip require no extended commentary. Still, my mixed picture, still the prospect for incremental progress toward greater liberty in the Arab and Muslim world is perhaps less dim than it might appear. To such improvement, the United States has the potential to make a significant contribution. Now, this study has been mentioned at least twice this morning, for a synopsis of the status of political rights and civil liberties in the Middle East, I think it's useful to consult the ratings of the most recent volume in Freedom House's series of studies on the state of freedom throughout the world. And here I refer to Raymond Gastel's Freedom in the World, Political Rights and Civil Liberties, 1985-1986. A new edition is coming out shortly, or indeed may already have been published. This volume, Freedom House volume by Gastel, to which I refer, rates freedom in no country in the Middle East on a par with freedom in Western Europe, the United States, or Canada. Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, Libya, Saudi Arabia, and Syria are all rated as not free. Among the states accorded a, quote, partly free status are Egypt, Jordan, Kuwait, Morocco, Tunisia, Turkey, and the United Arab Emirates. Israel, within its 1967 boundaries, an important qualification, again, this is Freedom House's definition when it speaks of Israel, within those boundaries, receives the highest rating for both political rights and civil liberties of any nation located in the Middle East. Let me repeat that. Israel receives the highest rating for both political rights and civil liberties of any nation located in the Middle East. However, Gastel, the Freedom House survey, does point out, and I quote, that Arabs in Israel must live in their homeland under the cultural and political domination of 20th century immigrants. They are not accorded the full rights of citizens. Detentions, house arrest, and brutality have been reported against Arabs opposing Israel's Palestine policy. Arabs are not allowed to buy land from Jews, while Arab land has been expropriated for Jewish settlement. And here, of course, Gastel is talking about Israel within its boundaries of 4 June 1967. In Israel's occupied territories, which it gives, of course, a separate consideration to, the political rights and civil liberties of the Palestinian inhabitants are rated as only marginally better than the freedom, if one can call it that, enjoyed by Iranians today, and marginally worse than the freedom retained by Lebanese. Given the importance of progress on the Palestinian problem to American national interests, and to stability in the Arab and Muslim world as a whole, the deplorable situation in the occupied territories should be a matter of particular concern to the United States. And I must say here, just parenthetically, I go to the Middle East at least once a year. I have a broad range of acquaintanceships in the Israeli Jewish community and the Palestinian Arab community. Again, I have never been more discouraged specifically about what is occurring in the territories with university closures, shooting of students, alienation of land, alienation of water, and a continuing process of Israeli settlement. If one looks at trends in political rights and civil liberties, some mildly encouraging signs do appear. This is my mixed picture now. Since 1973, Bahrain and Tunisia have improved modestly within the category of partly free states. And the United Arab Emirates and Jordan have progressed from unfree to partly free countries. Egypt, too, has improved from unfree to partly free and made the greatest absolute improvement of any Arab country. Apparently, with such developments in mind, Gastel observes that recently we have seen a modest resurgence of free institutions in the Middle East. It is in the interest of the West, and especially that of the United States, that policies be adopted toward the Middle East which foster this fragile tendency. In conclusion, let me say simply that U.S. attitudes toward the peoples and values of the Middle East will either nurture or inhibit the friends of freedom there. Above all, those few Arab and Muslim liberals should not be made to feel that the West, and especially the United States, consider all non-Israelis as actual or potential terrorists, or that the United States has set itself obdurately against serious discussion of the political objectives of those moderate friends who are supportive of greater democracy. Most Arabs and Muslims are not, I underline not, inherently opposed to the West. By demonstrating greater sympathy for the legitimate concerns of all those in the region, America can strengthen the timid advocates of freedom, weaken the surrogates of Moscow and Tehran, and advance its own national interests. Thank you very much.